Ambassador College and the Worldwide Church of God presents Gunner Ted Armstrong. All literature offered on this program will be sent free of cost to anyone requesting it.
Not a chance in a million that that plant will be
good for me. Let him put it in somebody else's backyard.
Sure, it's a risk. So is flying or walking across the street. I say we have to take
it. His hair fell out, man. Say he might have cancer.
Your energy weren't safe. The government wouldn't let him build. They know what they're doing.
I don't see any smoke and soot coming out of that dome, do you?
His wife can't have any children.
But Mater was against the Corps of Air, too. And I'm still driving mine.
It's obvious if we're running low on natural gas, we need nuclear power. We've got no other choice.
Well, what about our grandchildren?
The Garner Ted Armstrong Program. Radio and television commentator Garner Ted Armstrong visits a nuclear installation and presents the views of government officials, industrial leaders, and environmental spokesmen. Now, an in-depth look at nuclear power, risk or remedy.
This is the San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant, located about 3 miles south of former President Nixon's home at San Clemente, formerly called the Western White House. Americans know that from the Yom Kippur War in 1973, the entire world has changed. We're on an energy crisis in a nuclear energy binge. We're looking for alternative energy sources, and this is one of those. A nuclear power plant here near San Clemente, California, at a beach called San Onofre, its capacity 450,000 kilowatts. In the background, you can see construction of two additional nuclear power generators. These, when completed, will provide electricity for about 2 million people, and the cost will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 billion. Proponents claim the expansion of this San Onofre site will mean a savings of from 25 to 30 million barrels annually of very expensive, low-sulfur fuel oil. It will also obviously reduce our dependence on imported fossil fuels from Arab countries. But opponents of nuclear power maintain that the risks of nuclear power far outweigh any of the benefits. A nuclear catastrophe, they say, is too big a price to pay for your electrical bill. So we're going to present to you both sides of the controversy and show how vital it is to evaluate the hazards and the benefits of nuclear power in arriving at a decision as to whether the energy of the atom should be used as a major power source in the future.
Can America meet her energy needs in the next 25 years without relying upon nuclear power?
Absolutely not. I believe the lights would go out in many parts of the country right now if we didn't have nuclear power.
I believe that nuclear power, constituting only about 8% of our electrical production and maybe a little over 1% of our total energy, can be phased out over a period of time, maybe 5 to 10 years, so that we don't need to depend on it at all.
Very, very few people, are antagonistic or in any way negative towards nuclear power.
I think the American people are vastly underinformed regarding this decision, and one evidence is that in the very same Harris poll, 63% favored building more nuclear plants, but if asked if they would still favor nuclear plants if Ralph Nader opposed them, which he does, that 63 dropped to 39% in favor.
If you reflect around, you will find some who are still concerned, principally because I think they do not understand or comprehend the various effects of radiation and what the impacts might be. I think in general the country, as the survey showed, feel that we must get our energy from somewhere, and nuclear is a good clean source.
And we don't need nuclear power. But it becomes a political ballgame because so much money has been invested in nuclear power, and industry wants to make that return on investment. So it's going to be very difficult to convince people of that.
As you can see, this is a highly charged issue. This whole question of nuclear energy can be properly understood only in the context of the energy crisis. Despite widely conflicting opinions, the world is running out of oil and natural gas. Domestic production of these two fuels has been declining since 1970, yet they provide about 75% of U.S. energy requirements. But by 1990, they will supply roughly only 50% of our energy needs. On the other hand, U.S. energy consumption has increased on the average of 3% annually over the past 70 years. And even the most conservative and optimistic planners tell us we will need to double our energy production by the year 2000. Hopefully, we can produce a significant amount of energy from renewable resources like solar, fusion, geothermal, tidal action, and the like. But these are all future possibilities, not present realities. So what options do we have for today? We could continue to pay the skyrocketing costs of imported fuels and remain at the mercy of the OPEC countries, or exploit our coal and nuclear power resources. A crash program to drastically increase mining of coal could provide a partial solution to our energy needs, but to expect coal to provide virtually all of our energy requirements in the next 25 to 50 years would be totally unrealistic. So many people are looking to nuclear energy to provide our future energy needs in the United States. And obviously, this particular state of technological art is far more developed than some of the other alternative energy sources, such as geothermal and the like. But whenever this issue is given public debate, it seems people get highly emotional and volatile. We think it's essential to understand, therefore, the exact process by which electrical power can be generated by a nuclear plant. This dome shape has become a universal symbol for the nuclear power plant. The dome acts as a protective safety shield covering the nuclear reactor that is located in the ground underneath the dome. In a nuclear reactor, the fuel is not oil, gas, or coal, but uranium dioxide pellets. Over 6 million pellets are assembled in the core of the reactor vessel at San Onofre. When the reactor is in operation, countless atoms of uranium are split by neutrons in what is called a chain reaction. This splitting, or fissioning, of uranium atoms releases energy that heats pressurized water to about 600 degrees Fahrenheit. That superheated water then leaves the reactor and enters a heat exchanger where it heats an entirely separate supply of water, transforming it into steam. The steam then spins a turbine, which turns a generator, and electric power is the result. In this particular plant, ocean water is pumped in to help condense the spent steam, after which that same ocean water is returned to the sea. The reactor is controlled by special control rods which absorb neutrons. When the rods are inserted into the reactor, the chain reaction stops and no heat is produced. Of course, if the control rods ever failed to function, or if the reactor were not adequately cooled, a potentially dangerous release of radioactivity could occur.
So it makes no sense to me to go with that kind of a technology. And yes, I'm afraid of nuclear power. I feel that once we are aware of the risks, we will phase out nuclear power on a rather dramatic timetable.
But I think on part of those that really know, the answer is a resounding yes, they're safe and can be handled safely and provide us the energy we need in a safe, environmentally clean manner.
Crisis is no game. Solving it will take international cooperation and individual effort. You want to know why this crisis exists and what you can do about it personally. Request your free copy of What's Behind the Energy Crisis. Write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney. Please enclose a postage stamp to assist with mailing.
Well, you know, the entire controversy over the proliferation of nuclear power plants is far more than a mere academic question or a voter's issue one way or the other. It's a very vital issue, which you as an individual will not be able to ignore much longer. In the near future, you can fully expect ballot referendums, bond issues, petitions, locational debates, which will be quite a furor, I should imagine, environmental impact studies, and much more. But how did we ever get committed to nuclear power in the first place? Well, mainly because it has obvious merits. On the positive side, proponents point out that the nuclear power industry is already here. The technology is known. In other words, it's proven. In fact, the AEC report to the president in 1962 predicted 7% of electricity would come from nuclear power by 1980. As it turns out, it's already nearly 9%. 1 pound of uranium fuel, as it goes into a nuclear reactor with present technology, will supply as much heat as 50,000 pounds of coal going into a coal-burning plant. Secondly, it's competitive. In Connecticut and Massachusetts, consumers supposedly saved $140 million by having their electricity come from nuclear power instead of oil. In Virginia, proponents say the total cost of nuclear electricity is about 1.16 cents. By comparison, the total cost of oil electricity is about 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour, and the cost of coal electricity is near 2.26 cents per kilowatt hour. Thus, nuclear electricity is about two-thirds as expensive as other electricity forms. Next, nuclear power could help free us from dependence upon international oil suppliers who wield the power of boycott and price controls. These and other reasons have brought about the rapid escalation of nuclear power plants. California alone can expect a total of 60 nuclear sites within the next 10 years, with over 2,000 across the nation. And herein lies the problem. This threat of expansion has grown into a national controversy. In putting this program together, we've spoken with leading scientists, with industry spokesmen, environmentalists, concerned citizens, and government officials, most of them from ERDA, which stands for Energy Research and Development Administration. This top-level agency was established for the purpose of helping America attain self-sufficiency in energy. Now, with all this as background, we're ready to take a detailed look at the major objections raised by the opponents of nuclear power. These objections are accidents and the threat of contamination, waste disposal and storage problems, and theft or terrorism.
Are there real dangers posed by nuclear power plants?
No, nuclear power plants are safe. This safety has been demonstrated. There's never been a member of the civilian population in the United States injured by the operation of a civilian nuclear power plant.
Through a nuclear accident in which the plant becomes so overheated that it would, in effect, melt down and release radioactive gases. And this would contaminate the environment and possibly injure thousands of people and contaminate, some experts say, an area the size of Pennsylvania in the worst type of accident.
But as you know from the Rasmussen study that was completed, an extensive and expensive two-year study led by Professor Rasmussen of MIT, conclusion is that the likelihood of any such thing as that happening and resulting in release is a 1 in a million reactor years. So, you know, the odds are pretty small.
This idea of games, 1 in a million, doesn't mean anything. That same game was tried to play with the prediction of how well NASA's rockets would function, and they used the same calculational methods. And they found out, they predicted that there'd be a chance of 1 in 10,000 of a failure of a rocket engine. What happened in reality was that they had 4 failures out of 100, something on that order. So what they do with mathematics and what happens in real life are in two entirely different worlds.
It's pretty difficult to conceive of a containment vessel and other things rupturing to the point and the core meltdown to the point where as some severe critics would say thousands of lives will be lost. It's pretty hard to believe that on the basis of the facts we have.
Nobody knows the true estimate because that kind of study is completely oblivious to what happened at Brown's Ferry. One workman with one little candle started a fire which consumed $50 million worth of very sensitive equipment and nearly resulted in an uncontrollable meltdown.
Yes, sir, Worker did start a fire, but no, it didn't cause a meltdown of the reactor or endanger the public. It's an amazing display, actually, of the safety of the reactor rather than any hazards. Maybe three, maybe four, maybe five different systems at one time or another protect you against a meltdown. And then there's two or three or four systems that will protect you against this meltdown releasing any sizable amount of radioactivity.
Do you personally feel that opponents of nuclear power are involved in a scare campaign?
And yes. I think they, those that are dedicated to stopping nuclear power.
If we're leading a scare campaign, it's based on some very solidly founded research and information that even the proponents admit in terms of problems. So, yes, I'm very much afraid of nuclear power, particularly when alternatives do exist.
Those who have been most pronouncedly critical, I guess is the way to put it, do not have quite the responsibility to face the issues squarely and tell the whole story.
The scare tactics involved in, say, my side of the issue are simply those that you might necessarily have to use if you were training someone to use dynamite safely. Dynamite can explode, and if you do not say this, you are not doing your job in training someone about the hazards of this kind of material.
Would you care to cite any examples of misrepresentation of the facts?
Well, one might be the plutonium particle issue.
Plutonium is perhaps, as Glenn Seaborg, its co-discoverer, termed it, a fiendishly toxic substance, such that it has the potential of 1 pound being able to cause, if dispersed in the atmosphere, 9 billion lung cancers. It's that lethal.
No, it has not escaped from commercial power reactors. This is an example of the what-if kind of a question. And I think it's postulated along these lines. They say that, for example, there will be many, many tons of plutonium produced, which is the fuel. And they ask the question, well, what if 0.1% of this escaped? Wouldn't many millions of people be killed by lung cancer? It's a what if.
Just to give one little tidbit from a public Atomic Energy Commission document, 4.4 pounds of plutonium oxide, if released in a city, could create a significant cancer hazard for 40 miles downwind. 1,000 feet downwind from that release, everyone would contract lung or bone cancer. 40 miles downwind, 1% of the people would contract cancer.
For example, in World War II, in making the first atomic bomb, people inhaled plutonium. Those people had very careful medical follow-ups. Not a one of them yet has gotten cancer, even though they have breathed in and had in their bodies for over 30 years far more than the allowable limits. Medical tests on small animals, they have put plutonium into these small animals. No cancers have developed. It's pretty much of a what-if kind of a question.
Alexander Petrovich, Russian army officer, spent 4 years in Cairo, Egypt as a tank corps advisor. Eric Kaufman, industrial planner involved in automobile marketing in Hamburg, Germany. Charles Tex Williams, vital materials import manager for a major international firm based in Galveston, Texas. Hiroshi Omoto, management trainee at an international toy marketing firm in Osaka, Japan. Though all from different cultures, speaking foreign languages, and having varied occupations, these men share a common interest, oil. This booklet, What's Behind the Energy Crisis, analyzes why it exists and what you can do about it. To request your free copy of What's Behind the Energy Crisis, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney. Please enclose a postage stamp to assist with mailing.
Critics of nuclear power claim that if we rely increasingly on nuclear power, we will have prodigious amounts of nuclear waste with no adequate method for storage.
Well, I don't know what prodigious means.
I do know the size of the waste. For example, it's been commonly quoted that all of the radioactive waste, the high-level waste, that will come out of the reactors now operating or to be built up to the year 2000 could be stacked on one football field 10 feet high. That's all. That's all of the reactors.
But we're not talking about volume. Volume here with radioactivity is not dependent on dependent on size in terms of damage it can do. It's radioactivity. And 1 microgram of plutonium has been shown to cause lung cancer. And that's, you know, very lethal. So size or volume isn't important. It's the radioactivity that's important.
With the room that we've got in this country and the methods that we have for storing waste that are being explored, there's no real concern over being able to store them.
The government now has no clear program for the ultimate disposal or storage of radioactive wastes. This means that we're constantly using and creating these fission products, which are highly radioactive, and with no idea what we're going to do with them. That poses a tremendous burden, not only today, but for future generations, for our children and our children's children. And I think this is a significant problem.
In any case, I think we have no option. I think we're going to use all the nuclear we can use. Therefore, we must find ways to dispose of the waste. I don't think the heritage of that is quite as bad as it's being painted.
Proponents of nuclear power claim that if the entire U.S. electrical power capacity were nuclear, the waste per person per year would only occupy the volume of one aspirin tablet.
The statement is accurate, but what it implies is that this aspirin tablet is easy to take care of. Presently we have not one aspirin tablet's worth, but 80 million gallons worth of military atomic waste, which will have to be guarded for centuries and centuries.
They will be in a solid form. We have the technology now, and that's being done. Liquid wastes are being reduced down to solids and being stored in that way.
Is there any hard data on the fact showing that perhaps some nuclear waste have already escaped from their storage confinement into the environment?
Yes, low-level waste at Hanford, for instance, have gotten into the Columbia River and have been traced all the way to Japan.
We've built many tanks at Hanford and Savannah River, where we're making plutonium. Thin walls and only one wall, and they've been there 30 years, and they get to be leaky buckets after a while. We're on an intensive program now to build other wall tanks and in business of solidifying them. Yes, there have been releases, and yes, we're working as rapidly as we can to bring that total matter under control so that it never repeats itself.
Getting back again to a very suspect point as far as the public is concerned, are there, again, adequate preventative sabotage measures taken with the present number of nuclear power plants we have?
Would you believe that there are only 2 guards required by the federal government at these plants, plus 1 security supervisor who sits in the office and watches the alarm systems and radios for help when the SLA comes charging in with the machine guns or whatever? The General Accounting Office of Congress last October made a formal charge that 2 or 3 armed individuals could take over a nuclear plant for purposes of sabotage, and they further stated that the ADC and the licensees of the plants agreed that this was the case. There have been no new security rules since.
I think they're adequate. I don't know if they will deter a person from trying, because you perhaps are not a normal person and you'll try it regardless of the precautions. I don't particularly want to go into all the safeguards that are applied. Suffice it to say that they treat these things very seriously. They have detectors. They have a sufficient number of people, fences, barbed wire, all that sort of thing. No, I don't think there's a tremendous risk from sabotage. Although some people are bound to try it just for the fun of it.
A 1 kiloton device within 400 feet, say, of San Onofre would do the job. Now, it's possible to go surfing within 400 feet of San Onofre, the public beach. This plant is located nearly 3 miles from the former Western White House, and the same hazard existed then. This is unconscionable when the Russians or some country that wanted to look like Russians could simply come up in a little pleasure boat, set their bomb in the sand, and vanish into the fog. This may sound a little bit like James Bond, but James Bond things happen, and you read them in the newspaper all the time.
They could have some nitroglycerin They could, even if they obtain an atomic bomb somewhere like James Bond did some years ago, they could do that. I don't really think it would blow the reactor apart. The reactor is pretty much designed against not necessarily that particular scenario, but similar things. For example, a current design criteria for some years has been that the reactor has to take a commercial aircraft diving onto it at terminal velocities. I believe these days they use a 747 if it's about the heaviest thing.
We're at a distinct disadvantage. The only thing we have in favor is the facts. And once people recognize the distinct nature of radioactivity and the incredible damage it can do not only to public health, but to things like law enforcement and national security against foreign enemies, I feel that they are bound to come around to the view that there are other ways of generating electricity.
Look, it's an open ball game. We don't have anything to hide in this business. And so therefore, let's discuss our problems and get them aired and get them examined by the most competent people. And doing that, I think over a period of time, you will see the people favoring nuclear power going up as opposed to going down.
Yes, they clearly prefer nuclear power, but I've been at many, many debates all over the country, and I'm surprised that when they finally hear the other side, there is clearly an overwhelming edge of people who prefer the CSGO, conservation, solar, and other energy routes, and this has consistently been the case.
Perhaps underlying the entire question is one even more profound. Why all of the scramble and search for alternative energy sources in the first place? Well, the answer is found only in whether or not the United States is ever going to face up to the fact that we cannot continue on our quest for the good life, meaning the voracious devouring of non-renewable Earth's resources, whether you're speaking of uranium, from which nuclear energy is provided, or the fossil fuels and natural gas, or even metals, which become increasingly in short supply. Are we going to continue the way of life to which we are presently hooked, unwilling to give up our toys? Well, the answer in the nuclear quest seems to be we are unwilling to give up our technology and what we, in this sea of fantastic materialism, seem to equate as the good life in our search for energy sources. So those who are for nuclear energy are convinced that once the facts are known, you, the public, will know and will vote overwhelmingly and will welcome the atom as a new source of power. Those who oppose nuclear energy are equally convinced that the facts will prove that nuclear power is fraught with uncertainties and unacceptable risks. We as Americans must demand that all the facts are made clearly public and brought out into the open so that we can make a wise and careful decision. To be completely informed on the entire panorama of the question of the energy crisis, you need to write for this unique booklet and find out the entire backdrop of what has happened in the world since the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Till next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong at the San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant saying goodbye, friends.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is sent free upon request. For your free copy of What's Behind the Energy Crisis booklet and your subscription to the monthly magazine Plain Truth, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney. Please enclose a postage stamp to assist with mailing. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this time. Brought to you by Ambassador College and the Worldwide Church of God.